So I don't know if any of you saw the new article that had been put up on geeknative.com over the last couple of days about The World Below and StoryPath Ultra that's expected to debut in that game. But one of the interesting things that was in this particular article was that when it was talking about the power level in The World Below, it says characters in The World Below will have access to exalted level powers, which means godlike abilities. Now, StoryPath is no stranger to these kinds of power levels. The Scion games, of course, have a lot of that, but Trinity also has more than its fair share with Aberrant and all of the superhero powers that Novas can have. And so thinking about the fact, though, that one of their stated goals for StoryPath Ultra is to be able to accommodate some of these very high power level type games. And it makes me wonder what may be in store for Trinity in the future. Maybe new eras of the game that allow for even higher power levels, maybe even higher than Aberrant. I don't know. It's just an interesting thing to think about. Where could they be going with this in the future? But you know, right now, welcome back to Trinity Continuum Airwaves. My name is Corey Reynolds. I am your host. This is a podcast all about the Trinity Continuum, and you may have noticed that we are not coming to you today from YouTube in addition to the podcast, and that's just because, well, that's a little too much work to do it every single week. I said it was probably a one-off thing, or at least for now, but it was kind of fun to do that last week. If you didn't get a chance, go out and check out the YouTube channel. It's just Trinity Continuum Airwaves is the channel. There's only one video on it so far. It is the 15th episode of Trinity Continuum Airwaves. And so, you know, if you want to see what I look like and just kind of see what I'm putting together there of some potential for future video content, you can go take a look at that. But anyway, today I want to talk about a couple of things that I've been getting into here in the last few days that I've thought are pretty darn cool. The first one of those being I've finally gotten through all the parts of the Eon book that deal with the various locations and whatnot. I'm finally getting into the character creation stuff. But before I go too far into that for Eon, I want to point out one of the coolest things that I have read so far in any of the Trinity Continuum stuff that I have read, and that is the write-up on the planet Eden in the chapter of space and off-world locations that's in the Eon Core book there. This world, this planet that they have built has got to be just one of the coolest pieces of world building that I've seen in a role-playing game in a really long time. So let me break Eden down for you a little bit. Of course, I'm super interested in pretty much anything that has the word Eden in it, not just because it's a biblical word, but I mean, if you haven't noticed already, the sort of direct link to the show for Trinity Continuum Airwaves, for the Deliberative podcast, those all come from my domain, which is edenian.com. I have a very huge fascination with the concept of Eden and the people who would live in Eden, which I call them Edenians. And in fact, you know, I was talking to Kim Godwin a little bit after our interview that we aired a few weeks ago during the Ether Kickstarter, as we were just kind of sitting and chatting after we had recorded the primary bit that I was going to do for the show. We were talking about our own sort of interests in how, you know, things that we would like to do someday. She had mentioned that she would like to have a story about finding the Garden of Eden. And I said, that's really interesting because that's one of my own fascinations as well. In fact, when I was in elementary school, I was thinking, you know, I would really love to write a new Indiana Jones story, but what is there to be found that hasn't been found already in those movies? And the thing that first jumped up to my mind was the Garden of Eden. I thought, can we find it? Let's look through the biblical data. Let's see if we can locate where it might be. And you have all of these great references to four different rivers, two of which are the Tigris and Euphrates. And so, you know, I was starting to look at atlases and maps and figure out where could this thing be? And it's really set me on a lifelong journey of being fascinated with everything to do with the Garden of Eden. I've even written three novels that haven't been published yet that are a part of this, my fascination with this. And I won't say anything more because my ideas are pretty unique there and I don't want to spoil them for eventual publication. But anyway, so I love anything to do with Eden. So you got a planet named Eden in your Eon. I'll take two helpings of that. Thank you very much. But let's just go through some of the amazing stuff that we see in this planet. I mean, first of all, it's very much like Earth. All of its gravity, atmospheric stuff, all of that, it very closely matches to Earth. So it's a kind of a garden paradise just right off the bat. But then in addition to that, it has some extremely unique characteristics, one of which is called the miriasma. And that is their word for this. This is like the coolest thing ever. This planet has like a dozen different biomes, we might say, you know, now that Minecraft has introduced us all to this idea of different biomes and the division between biomes. I think this is even easier to picture for people these days. So the planet has like about a dozen different biomes, and those biomes are actually, it says that they're in competition with each other, that they are fighting with one another for control over territory. And what makes that cool is the entire biome is one giant organism. They're called myriasomes. And so each myriasome, it sort of manifests itself in the various flora and fauna that make up that biome or that make up that ecosystem. And it has like this collective hive mind type intelligence, so that one creature is controlling the entire thing, and these are in competition with one another. They sort of fight each other through the uses of their plants and animals that they're manifesting within their region, and they see the colonists and the settlers on Eden as being another competitor for resources, and so they are attempting to fight against the colonists by creating, you know, poisonous weeds that might kill them or deadly animals that might hunt them down while they're outside and all that kind of stuff. So super fascinating just on the surface. But in addition to all of that layer of coolness, the second layer of coolness is that on this world, there are Novas from the Nova Age, from the Aberrant game, that have not given in to the monstrous nature of Aberrance and instead are still acting like the superheroes that they were back in the Nova Age. And they are protecting the people of the planet Eden from these miriasma. And it's a really interesting system where the people are very thankful to have them around. They have a celebrity status, very much like they did in the 2020s, 2030s, before the Aberrant War. And so you have this like pocket, a place where you can play Aberrance if you want to. You could play Scions from the Eon game. You could play Talents living amongst all this other stuff. It's just a really cool mashup type of a world that allows you to tell some very, very interesting stories. And that sort of the moving borders of the various biomes because of the competition of these miriasma and then the presence of the superheroes, I just think it would be a super, super fun location to adventure in. I can't wait. Every time you read some of this stuff, you think you're imagining all the games that you're going to play in that place, and a lot of times you end up just not playing any, and that's really sad. You know, 10 years down the road, you look back and you go, gosh, I really wish I would have played a game in Eden, but man, I want to make this like one of my first things that I play in Eon, because it is just such a cool location. But speaking of playing games in the Trinity Continuum universe, as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, I've been working on a Trinity Continuum core adventure to put out in the Story Path Nexus, and I'm actually hoping to be able to playtest that this Monday on Labor Day with my family, and I'm really looking forward to the fun kind of stuff that we're going to get to do in this adventure, because I've set it up to have a lot of interesting set piece moments and whatnot. But what I've been doing today is I have been designing the sample characters that will go along with that adventure. So I plan to have four different characters in the back of the book that you'll be able to use in case you didn't want to make your own character, and because I have some young children who I don't want to sit there with them and help them through the long process of making their own character. So I'm putting these things together. So today I have been building characters for Trinity Continuum Core and getting really good at that particular process, which, you know, it has been said in various places around the web that it would have been very helpful for them to have put some sort of like a summary checklist at the end of the character creation chapter. And oh my goodness, is that not true. This is one of those things that as we look forward to what we've mentioned already, this StoryPath Ultra that may be rolling out, and a potential revision to the Trinity Continuum Core rulebook, just to kind of tighten up the rules. I feel like it would be a good thing to tighten up the character creation chapter, to summarize some of these things that are in there, to clarify some of these things, because there are interesting little doodads here and there. Like as you are building a talent, for example, you put half the character together with the front half of the book, then you skip to the back half of the book to get your gifts and look for that kind of thing, and you have to look at a chart to see which gifts are attached to which of the sample paths that they've put out, instead of just putting that material with the paths themselves like they did with skills and edges and all that. Just, it's, to be honest, it's a little bit of a mess. I mean, I am in love with the Trinity Continuum Core rulebook, don't get me wrong, but it's a bit of a craziness jumping back and forth between all of those different things, and I'm very glad that I have a copy of it electronically to be able to zoom back and forth between those pages. It would be really irritating to do it in a physical book. Even as you're doing something as simple as picking the attributes for your character, there are a couple of places where you're adding extra attribute dots. You're adding a bunch at the beginning, then you're increasing one for each one of your approaches, and then you jump to the talent section in the back of the book where you add one more based on your inspirational moment, and then you come back to the finishing touches and you add one additional attribute dot, and you know, you're thinking about a new player working through this stuff, and it's like, holy cow, how are they supposed to keep up unless they've really, really read this thing carefully? And one of the questions that I still have, I couldn't find a good answer for it as I was tooling around the internet looking for this particular answer, is how many contacts do you get? It seems like you get one for each path that you have. So a standard character would have three, one for your origin path, one for your role path, and one for your society path. But there is a line in the section of character creation that talks about the paths and your connections and your contact that says it's referring to the character that you're creating as a she begins play with one contact. And so it's like, what does that mean? Does it mean I get one total, one per path? Those kinds of things can be rather confusing. And so anyway, but I've still been having a blast making these characters. It is amazing that even with something like this, as seemingly low power as a talent, just how much actual power you can have. I built a secret agent sharpshooter today. That was my concept for one of the sample characters that's going to be in my adventure, that has just the most amazing tools when it comes to using his gun in various ways. I love the sharpshooter edge. I love the sniper style edge. I love the gun tool edge that you can get off of AIM. There are so many neat things that you can do. It really feels a lot like the gunslinger class in Pathfinder that allows you to do all of these cool trick shots and everything else with your gun. And I was just thinking about that. You know, I've finished up now the Glass Cannon podcast, and so I have Gunslinger on the brain as I've been listening to all of that, and as I'm reading through constructing this character, I'm just seeing so much of that there. But there's so much power here, and I love, you know, one of the things that I have loved so much about the character creation and the edges specifically in the Trinity Continuum Core is what they have done with the wealth edge. I might have mentioned this in a previous episode, but how cool is it that your wealth edge that tells how much money your character has an immediate impact on gameplay for a Trinity Continuum character, in that as you are designing your weapon and your armor and your vehicle right at the beginning of the game, you get extra tags to apply to those things based on how many dots of wealth you have. So this sample character that I'm creating, he has 3 dots of wealth, and so as you create an armor, you get 1 dot just for creating the armor, just automatically. It automatically has a soft tag that gets applied to it, plus you get 1 other dot, and then you can add 3 more because you have 3 dots in wealth, or at least if I got that wrong, correct me. That's really the way I feel like it should be based on the way it reads. But as you're constructing a weapon, it's the same thing. You get 1 tag for free for creating the weapon. And then three additional because I have three wealth tags or three wealth dots. And so that is just so cool. And it really does represent what having wealth means. It means you have a chance to get a gun that is an ultra high quality weapon with a tactical sight that lets you fire more comfortably into other range increments. And it really suits a sharpshooter to have this real special weapon that's able to do these kinds of things. And he has money, so he's able to buy just what he needs to get that weapon right. So anyway, I've been having a blast with the character creation thing. It is a little clunky. It would be very hard, especially for a child to do it. But when you really get into it, you can have so much fun with this. I'm actually having more fun with the core character creation than I did with the Aberrant one, which you would think is much more involved because you're spending the 150 experience points and all that buying the powers. But I've just been having a good time thinking about, I guess it's like, you know, you have a limited pool of things that you can do, so you want each one to really matter. But also knowing what power level the game is going to be at playing a core game, knowing the difficulty numbers are going to be pretty low, you don't have to min-max absolutely everything. You can really think about how your character would be very three-dimensional and rounded in a lot of different situations, and you can put a lot of that detail in there using the kinds of things that they give you with the edges, with the gifts, and all that. So I've just been having a blast. It's a lot of fun. If you haven't done it, you need to do it. And I'm thinking the first thing I need to do on my YouTube channel is we need to have a character creation summary video that just walks through the steps, make sure you don't forget the various things. So you can go ahead and be looking forward to that, because that is on my short list of things that I want to do in the next little while. So having a lot of fun here. But what do you think about Eden? Have any of you actually played a game in Eden, in Eon? And if you have, tell me, what's that been like? What sort of stories did you tell? Give us a call, 678-369-3214. Just let us know what you've been doing with Eden, or what has your experience been with the character creation for the core game or for any of the various eras out there? Well, what's your experience been? What do you think about how many contacts you get? I really do think it's one per path, but if I'm wrong, let me know. What do you think about all this stuff? I want you to participate in this conversation. As I say very often, this show is meant to be a community conversation. I want more of you guys to call in. I know that you're listening out there. I get comments from people. Don't think that your comment, that your thoughts don't matter. We want to hear them. Send them into the show. It livens it up for all of us. So sit either, call in with the call-in number. Again, that number is 678-369-3214. Send us an email at trinitycontinuumairwaves@gmail.com, and we will put your thoughts on the air. So I am looking forward to hopefully next week being able to unveil some more of this adventure that I've been working on and get that out to you guys. But we'll see how that goes. I don't know how all of those different moving parts are going to come together between now and then, but I do have some high hopes that it might, especially since we have a day off this week. But I'm going to be spending at least 3 hours on Labor Day watching the RRR movie. If you haven't seen the trailer for that thing, oh my goodness, go look at that. It looks like an absolute riot. So anyway, that's going to take up some of my time, but that's going to just about do it for this episode. I'm going to be looking forward to seeing you all in the next one. Remember, send us your emails or give us a call, and we'll put you on the air. See you all.